Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to the Get a Grip podcast. We made it. We did it. Good job, everybody. I'm really proud of you. We made it to the Masters. It is officially Masters week. I wrote about the anticipation factor for this week, particularly 2023, and the Masters for the Fried Egg newsletter on Monday. If you're not subscribed, make sure you dial up that subscription. It's great stuff, and a lot of talented people involved in that week in and week out. But 263 days it'll be since Cameron Smith won at St. Andrews, and Thursday starts off another major season. That is a long time. That is 72% of the calendar year we go without a major championship. And obviously with the schedule change and the PGA moving, we get it all relatively concentrated, and then we go a long time without a men's major championship, and we are back. It's going to be an interesting week. Tiger's back, which is exciting. You know, all the live guys playing brings a completely new wrinkle to the Masters. And of course, we get the 13th hole and some changes to the course, and an excellent Augusta National Women's Amateur, by the way. Shout out to Rose Zhang for winning without her best stuff, which is a very important thing when you're considered one of the best in the world, to be able to go out there and take home trophies when you don't have your A game. And that was definitely the case on Saturday. So shout out to Rose. Scott Van Pelt is back, and Scott has been extremely generous with his time over the years. We talked about it off the bat, how long we've been doing these pre-Masters podcasts, and they date back to early podcast days, is what I'll say, when not everybody in the world had a podcast. And so Scott's back. We discuss the Masters. We discuss the storylines we discussed last year and get into all the good, the bad, the otherwise. And we even talk a little bit about Liv at the back end. But obviously, anytime I get a chance to talk to Mr. Van Pelt, I'm excited about it. A couple of house cleaning things before we get to Scott. I have been fortunate and lucky to be a part of the Masters.com broadcast team over the last couple of years. This will be year number three for me. So Masters.com, dial it up on Thursday. You'll hear me and Billy Kratzert and Colt Nost doing featured groups, which we're excited about. Always honored to be a part of anything involved in and around Augusta National. So that'll be really fun. And another thing I'm doing this year with Augusta National is partnering with the Masters social media accounts. I'm going to be hosting a Twitter Spaces after play every evening. We've got some awesome guests lined up. We've got players. We've got media people. We've got people that aren't really involved in and around golf. But it'll be a 30-minute chat when play wraps about what had happened. And early in the week, we'll prep you for course storylines and player storylines and all that and more. And I promise you the guest list is one that you're going to be interested in if you're listening to this podcast right now. So when play ends, jump on Twitter. You can follow me at Shane Bacon, obviously follow the Masters account as well. And that'll be something we're doing each and every night all the way through Sunday night. So that'll be exciting, and really appreciate the Masters thinking of me with that. Just some house cleaning things. We've got t-shirts that we did with our friends at Breaking Tee, Ground Under Repair Design t-shirts for spring golf. You can check those out at breakingtee.com/GUR. I have a coffee I collabed with our friends at Good Walk Coffee Company. It's called the Bacon Breakfast Blend. It's great. I'm drinking it literally right now, made cold brew on Friday night. And you can order or subscribe to that service at goodwalkcoffee.com/bacon. And the last thing I will bug you with before we get to Mr. Van Pelt: I wrote a children's golf book. I'm sure you've heard me bark about it either on this podcast or on social media. It's called The Golfer's Zoo. The point of it was to write a children's book based in and around golf, because when I had my son 3.5 years ago, there weren't a whole bunch of children's golf books out there. And so I felt like, why not put something out there that could get kids interested in the game? You can order that. They have signed copies as well. back9press.com/bacon. You can order an unsigned one if you don't want anything to do with my signature, or you can order a signed one that are both available there at back9press.com/bacon. Okay, let's get to Masters content. Let's get to Scott Van Pelt. And we welcome back to the program Scott Van Pelt. You guys probably have heard the name before. Scott, do you know how long we've been doing these pre-Masters podcasts? Can you take a guess on the year?
I hate this, because I, like, in my head, I'd be like, it seems like 3 or 4 years. It's probably been like 8.
2017 was the first one. That was early podcast days. We've been rocking and rolling. Always appreciate the time. I know you're on a little pre-Masters vacation. We're recording the week before. I know you're probably diving deep into all your Masters research. We've talked a little bit about research for this event because this is a big name event. It's not the PGA. It's not the US Open. It's smaller fields. What is it like for you to get into golf when you've been focusing so much on, you know, NFL and NBA, obviously getting closer to the playoffs and March Madness? What's your prep like for Masters and the PGA Tour?
It's just the weekly consumption of the content, you know? I mean, because I came up in this business in the sport, and it's such a relationship sport, as you well know, you've always got somebody, whether it's the caddy or the player or both, who you're thinking, oh, wow, I'd be psyched for so-and-so if they, you know, won this week. I'm consuming it all the time. And particularly like that West Coast where you got, man, you had some big time, like Riviera with Rahm and Homa, like getting after it. I mean, that's just close to feeling like a major as you can have for a non-major, I think. So, I mean, it's not like it's a chore for me to keep up. I mean, in terms of like strokes gained and this, that, and the other thing, like I don't have those in the chamber to fire right now. But frankly, and you and I have talked about this, that's a golf course where largely I don't care how you show up plan. It's how have you played here in the past. And so many players have great frames of reference and fond memories, as we've also talked about through the years, that I honestly don't think it often matters how well you played, you know, in the match play or wherever. It's how do you feel like you're going to play Thursday morning?
What is sports consumption like for you these days? You know, with it being your job and your job for what, the better part of 30 years? I mean, you know, you've been so dialed. You started, you know, covering golf, a Golf Channel. And then, of course, you know, you've gone on to bigger and better things and bigger and better, you know, studios and situations. What is it like now watching sports at night, spending time on the weekend, paying attention, even paying attention to golf?
I don't know what this says about me. Maybe I'm a simple man, Shane. I just love sports. I mean, if you look at the Final Four, your bracket notwithstanding.
Oh, God.
Although, whose bracket's any good? A 4-2-5s and a 9? I mean.
Did you get one Final Four team right? Did you get one right?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, for 4,
I like, yeah. UConn, but I thought Texas just felt like, no, they didn't get there. Although Texas went through Miami, neither here nor there. I didn't get any right, but it's so funny. I have little kids, but they love basketball. And like my 5-year-old, she keeps saying, Daddy, I can't believe Florida Atlantic is in the Final Four. I said, buddy, neither can I. And I've been watching it a whole lot longer than you. It's still interesting to me on a daily basis, basically every night. And I have been, you know, the show I've done by myself with Stanford Steve, you know, this is our 8th year and it's a lot, you know, being a sort of a one man band out there blowing the kazoo and banging on the drum and, you know, smashing the cymbals. But it doesn't feel like a chore to do it. It doesn't feel like hard, like work to do it, because there's some event, some result, some individual accomplishment on a daily basis that feels worthy of elevation, of celebration. And that's the only thing I think that keeps me not going, but like at some point you start thinking, all right, where are we on the back nine here? You know? And I'm like, hell, it's like, we've talked about this, right? Like twilight golf, nothing better. I just want nothing the sun better to stay up, and I just want to keep playing, man. You know, I still enjoy that.
I'm in the same boat. You probably can see behind me. I mean, I've got the 3 TV set up downstairs here in Connecticut.
Love it.
And, you know, I mean, my wife is, the funny thing is my wife is not a sports person, doesn't care about sports at all. Doesn't watch much sports with me. She rolls her eyes occasionally at me, but my love hasn't waned for sport. You know, I grew up obsessed and I'm still obsessed, and, you know, had a busy weekend, went to the Elite Eight game at MSG, got home, obviously watched the late game. And then come Sunday night, I'm sitting around flipping through the channels, and I was like, I got to watch Caitlin Clark play. I mean, this is an absolute stud at basketball, and I find myself kind of gravitating to sport even more so now than I did in the past. And are there times where you absolutely disconnect, where you have to make yourself get away from it for simple sanity?
Yeah, I mean, we get to the point on the back end of the NBA Finals where it's sort of like being a teacher. Like you kind of have that summer schedule where after the NBA finals, we sort of give everybody a wave and say, we'll see you for football. And I'm gone. And it's necessary just because, again, I'm not a laborer. I don't work hard the way others work hard. So I'm not asking anyone to pity me by any stretch, but there's only so much sort of mental energy you have. And at some point you just need to unplug from producing an hour or more of a show every day so that you can maintain whatever sanity you got. And then by the time, you know, the drums and the fight songs and college football gears up in August, you're like, giddy up, man, let's go. And it's wild, this kind of Ferris wheel or carousel that we're on in our business. You know, there are these little mile markers that when you hit them, it's like this adrenaline burst. And certainly Masters Week is absolutely the one. And again, since we've done this in 17, I'm sure revisiting things I've said before, there's just no week like Masters Week. Nothing else is like it. Sense of renewal, the sense of gratitude, the sense of who's going to put on a green jacket Sunday. You know, this is a week where it doesn't last long enough. You know, there's some weeks that go and you think, is the clock stuck? This is one of those weeks that it gets to Sunday almost too quickly.
How many Masters is this for you?
97 was the first one. That was a good one. And I missed a few in the middle, but I mean, it's 20 some odd, which is, which is absurd, but you know, it's the reality of it.
It's crazy to think that in 97, you get this story of this young kid really, you know, showing the world what he was about. I mean, you think about the Curtis yep. Strange interview and you think about what he did in 96 and he wins and he's successful and you're thinking to yourself, okay, the amateur stuff wasn't a fluke. This guy's the real deal. And then 97 happens and our entire minds changed really for the next 25 years in professional golf. Scott, it's 2023. Tiger's still the story yep. in golf. He's still the story at this Masters. And unlike last year, when we went into this going, A, is he going to play? And B, what's he going right. to look like? We got a chance to see a little bit of Tiger and see some great Tiger at Riviera. I mean, that third round was epic. He played exceptional golf. We saw some very good golf from him, especially on that Friday last year at Augusta National. But how different do you feel like this Masters is going to be for Tiger versus last year when there was so much unknown?
That's the key, Shane. A year ago, just we started getting that murmur that, wait, you know, Big Cat might play. And you're like, come on. But this is a man I've known a long time. And I just complete transparency here. That's not the kind of thing where I'm going to bother him and be like, hey, man, are you playing? But I think I sent some vague sort of, I don't even remember how I worded it, but it was something like, you know, look forward to seeing you next week, you know, in whatever capacity. And he's like, I got like a one word text back that just said trying. And when I got that back, I just sort of nodded. And I'm like, son of a bitch, he's playing. Because if he says he's trying, that means he's playing. And so, look, him making the weekend a year ago, I believe, was a win. Him making the weekend at Southern Hills was a loss because it meant he had to walk out there in that 30-something right. degrees in the rain. And it just, given his physical state, it served no purpose to be out there. It was more negative than it was positive. I look at everything now as it's all gravy, every bit of it. 19 was, that was the finish line in my mind because Sam and Charlie got to see Dad do it. And yet, say he hoops one on 7, then knocks it up there close on 8 and makes another one, and then, all right, makes a hard par on 9, then bombs one on 10, and he starts a second 9, he's a couple under. You see, I go, what if that crazy guy starts, huh? You're always going to entertain that what if with him that really I don't think nobody occupies that space in our brains. But and this is in no way knocking him. It's just acknowledging that, you know, I talk about the back nine. I mean, he's deep in the back nine here. And so there's so many great young players on form that I don't go there thinking he's going to win. I just I bet at some point he makes us feel something that only he makes us feel. And it's that, maybe it's that couple of birdies that make you wonder, well, what if? And that kind of happened at Riviera, didn't it?
Yeah, you bring up a great point, and I think this is something that I was really preaching over the last year about Tiger, is it's not so much about Tiger having to face the physical challenges that he goes through and the rust of his golf game, but it's all the people he has to beat. And, you know, at the match play this past weekend, Rory shoots 62-64 on that Saturday, and the matches go to 17 and 18. I mean, this is crazy good golf, and it's not like he's winning 5-4. And I thought it was cool that Rory acknowledged that after the round. I played nearly flawless golf, and still it took everything I had to win these matches. You mentioned how good the golf has been this year. I wrote on Twitter this week, this has been as fun a PGA Tour season as I can remember. You think about Homa and Rahm, we have Scheffler playing well, Jason Day, Ricky back in form, Rory's finding it again. I mean, these are the storylines you want to have all come together in and around Augusta National. Tiger's got to beat all those guys, but it's something you said earlier that's important, is Tiger understands this golf course better than anybody that exists on the planet. No knock to Jack Nicklaus. And he understands that if he can walk 72 and the swing is relatively fluid, he can at least scare somebody. And I think that's the fun part of it, because I think Tiger believes it as much, if not more, than any fan out there might believe in what he can do.
Just his presence, you know, it's just his presence. Somehow Molinari, Finau, and Kepka all rinsed it on 12 and 19. You're telling me if the guy, if Wood's name was someone else, and I'm not going to name another name because I'm not going to knock some other person, just make it any other person. You telling me all three of those dudes are wet on 12? I doubt it. Just his proximity on the leaderboard makes the I have a colleague, Bomani Jones, that I believe coined the term lemon booty. And you get the feeling, right? It starts to get a little bit tense, and I think Tiger it makes that feeling a reality more so than anyone else.
Do you think this is the only pre-Masters podcast that has the term lemon booty thrown out there? I'm gonna go with a hard yes on that.
The only pre-Masters, it better be, it better be, otherwise Bomani better get a check from somebody.
Scott, you've covered sports in an incredible era. I mean, you know, you think about early in your time getting to see Federer come about, and you get to see the end of MJ, and you get to see Kobe and Shaq, and obviously then we get to see LeBron and Tiger and Nadal, and all of these athletes, Serena, that are legendary GOAT status type of athletes. Is Tiger the most fun athlete that you've had the pleasure of covering in your career?
To be fair, he's the one that I covered sort of from a front row seat. You know, I've never covered a slam. You know, I haven't been there for Serena or Fed or Nadal or Djokovic, which, by the way, when I think about it, that trio of guys is the most ridiculous thing of all the years I've been doing it. Think about what that is. I mean, it's all three guys. You could make the case. People still like, I think people like Fed the most because he's so elegant, and Nadal, you have to admire the toughness and the fight, but it's like, well, how many did he win just on one surface? And then Djokovic isn't as popular, but he's ultimately going to be the most decorated. Like, that trio, to me, when I think about it, it would be if there were three Tigers. If Tiger had two other peers who had basically as many as him. Think about that. Like, that's insanity. But Tiger's the one that I covered the closest. So, you know, and it's the one to whom I have a personal connection. And I've been honest in saying that without him, my entire career doesn't happen, because it wouldn't have. And so all of that adds up to, he's just, it's entirely too personal for me with him, as opposed to the others. The others, I was much more just a spectator enjoying it the way, you know, everyone else was. Whereas with Tiger, I mean, I was lucky enough to be there for so many of these moments, and get to chat with him afterwards.
This is a unique Masters. You said you've covered your first one in 97. This is the first Masters going in where LIV is going to be thrown around, the idea of LIV and the tour and the players coming about at this event. This will be the first time we really see all of these players converge, you know, in 2023. What has it been like observing this PGA Tour versus LIV thing, you know, from, I'd say, slightly afar? I mean, you're a guy that that doesn't have to cover the PGA Tour week to week, even though I know you do occasionally. What's it been like just watching this in your seat?
I think the whole I'm all set. I'm good. I know the talking points. I'm familiar with them. There's the undeniably interesting part of the PGA Tour finding lots and lots of millions of dollars under couch cushions. There's no denying that part of it, and how the PGA Tour membership, those that stayed, have benefited greatly from what LIV did. But that's not unusual in any negotiation. Most people only understand the gun to the head. I don't care what business you're in. Very rarely does your employer say, here, let me give you all of this, unless you force that person's hand. And LIV did that. But when I'm just exhausted, it's not the right term. I'm just not interested in the talking points about it's golf, but louder. Okay, great. Then have fun with the loud stuff. If you like that, that's fine with me. I have zero problem with that. If you're into the team aspect, whatever. But the whole this versus that holds zero interest or water for me. What is interesting to me is the last time we saw Cam Smith in a major, that was pretty good back nine at St. Andrews.
Played okay.
Pretty sporty.
Played okay.
And it changed who he was as a player. Because you win that major and now you're different. And then he went to the LIV Tour, so we haven't seen him go head to head with these guys. And he was a guest with me, Shane, last year on Thursday, had 8 birdies in the first round. He's as fine a putter as there is on planet Earth. I'm really interested to see him play golf against these guys. And then there are a bunch of past Masters champions who are LIV players, as we know. Charles played well a year ago, kind of hadn't in a while, and he did. If DJ got hot, would it surprise anyone? No. If Reed did, no. Would it surprise? Of course not. So there's a long list. Bubba, I could keep going. That part of it is interesting. I've seen, you know, the topic come up, and we're going to have our media call here as you and I are talking in the week before. We'll have our media call, and I'm certain it'll be asked, like, how are you going to cover? And I guess I get the question, but I would turn it around with, well, how do you think we're going to cover them? This is not a PGA Tour event. This is the Augusta National Golf Club. They sent out the invitations. The field's the field. We're going to cover whomever plays well. And if someone plays poorly and they're a big name, it would be surprising. We would cover them, not with like, ha ha, look at this player didn't play well. There's nothing to be gained. There'll be no celebration of someone from that tour not playing well, just like we wouldn't ignore someone from the LIV Tour playing brilliantly. So I just think mostly the back and forth has mercifully ended. If you play on the LIV Tour again, have at it. And you can consume it now more easily than you could before. And if you don't find that as interesting, then it's real simple. Don't watch it. But I don't see how you couldn't find it compelling to have them all together, particularly on a stage that is Augusta National.
Compelling is the term. I mean, to me, it's, again, this is what this has done. The split from the PGA Tour and LIV is it's made the major championships that much more exciting. They're already the most exciting four events in men's golf for the four major championships. And now we get to see all of these people together in a rarity form. And to me, the only thing it's done for me in terms of prep is now I have to go to two links. You know, I normally would just go to OWGR.com and find how the results have been over the last five events. And now I got to go to the LIV website and see how those guys have done in the first couple of events. But other than that, I think it's exciting. I think the fact that there's an opportunity to see Cam versus Rory or Sergio get in the mix, or could you even imagine Phil Mickelson playing well? The rumor is he's had a decent run at Augusta over the years. Imagine if Phil goes out and shoots 3-under on Thursday. These are going to be storylines that'll be exciting to cover and to follow.
And I think folks get this about you, me, whomever the people are, and there's so many great folks out there doing great content around the sport. I think they all know that, like, you have the people that you root for, like I said earlier, like a caddy or a player. You think, oh, that'd be awesome. Like, I root for Ricky. I want Ricky to get back to where Ricky should be. Like, I don't mind saying that. Golf's more fun when Ricky's playing
great. Of course.
But in this situation, I'm just rooting for fun stories because, and I can't think of any Masters where you show up, even if it's a surprising winner, you know, that you aren't wildly entertained by the theater that only Augusta National can create. So I'm rooting for the stories. You said it well, like Sergio, Phil, Bubba, any of the older guys who haven't played as great lately, if any of them go out and shoot like 69 on Friday, Thursday, giddy up, man. Let's go. What do you got? You know, are you a 4-day story or not? You have been here. Can you be one again? I mean, I don't know who would be opposed to that.
A lot of clapping at Augusta National, not a lot of booing at Augusta National is what you typically see in the four days around the Masters.
Yeah.
Last year, when Scottie Scheffler won here, it was the end of this incredible run. And it wasn't to take anything away from what Scottie had done previously, but this was obviously the biggest win of his career, and he's backed it up. I mean, the game maybe wasn't as sharp throughout the rest of the season as it was prior to what he did at Augusta, but he still got himself in the hunt at the U.S. Open and still had a chance to win major championships. And we've seen Scottie do it again this year. How impressed have you been following Scottie Scheffler, not just through last year, but the early parts of this season?
As impressed as you can be, whatever, like, I'll try to avoid hyperbole. I just think he's as good at the game as you can be. And what I find most interesting about it is that it's not that it's not aesthetically pleasing. It's just that it's that unusual footwork. And he's a bigger guy. And he's an old soul, as so many people say, right? Like, he just feels completely in command of himself at all times in a sport where Spieth's having a running commentary with the world. You know, JT gets running hot. He's pissed off at everyone. Scheffler is just steady as she goes. And on some level, it's probably pretty easy to keep it pretty steady. Mostly you just shoot rounds under par. And mostly you have a pretty fair idea of where you're going to find it. But I'm as impressed as I could possibly be with his whole deal, his countenance, his game, just his whole deal. He came on with me, Shane, right after he got to number one. And I asked some dumb question about, like, hitting balls. Like, at any moment, do you realize, like, you're hitting wedges? He's like, I'm the number one player in the world. And he kind of laughed. That Scottie laughed. He's like, not really. And I'm thinking, as much as you could become number one in the world and not change, I really don't think he did. That's my boy, Sam.
What's up, Sam?
There's Charlie. Charlie, you want to say hi to Mr. Bacon?
Hi.
What's up, Charlie?
Okay. We're doing a podcast. Okay. Off you go. You guys got a game you guys are playing. What's the score?
No, Daddy. Huh? You and me are playing.
Oh, that's right. I'm behind. Charlie's got me down 10 at the half.
How old's Charlie?
Charlie's 5.
Okay. I got a 3.5-year-old, so I'm a little behind you there. My 3.5-year-old's not, like, obsessed with sport yet, but I think we're rounding the corner right now. We're getting very, very
there
close.
There you go. Well, he will be. He will be. Charlie's the guy that was – Charlie, can you believe Florida Atlantic's in the Final Four?
Yeah.
You can. You told me earlier you couldn't. Well, there goes my story. I don't know where we were talking about Scottie Scheffler, but he's good at golf, I think, is mostly what we were saying. And nothing he's done, you know, in the years since has done anything to change, you know, the belief that if he played well again. I mean, he's just a guy that I think will every year. I think there's that chunk that Augusta takes out of you, right? There's that. The gas tank drain. We saw it with Tiger in 19. I mean, it took everything he had. And Scottie dealt with that to a degree. But as you say, correctly, I mean, he certainly had opportunity since then. And he's played very well this spring and, you know, was right there in Austin with a chance at the match play again. So, I mean, again, he's one of those people that you think he'd play well or play poorly. I mean, poorly would be the shock.
You guys get a lot of praise with the ESPN coverage, not just at Augusta National and the Masters, obviously doing it with CBS, but when you guys go to the PGA Championship, it has a very, and I don't want to use the word relaxed to take away from the professionalism of what you guys do, but it is a very relaxed environment. The way you call golf is very relaxing. A lot of the people in and around you have a lot of fun with it. Is that something you guys talk about? Is that a planned environment that you guys try to present, or is that just how you guys kind of go about your business?
It's just us. We do one event a year. I mean, that's the thing that blows my mind about all of it, is it's, you look up and, like, Bob Wischusen's been doing hockey after doing college basketball. And Sean's been all over being a great broadcaster on anything that he does. And Fleming's doing basketball and then doing the Giants. And then David Duvall, I see like once a year, but we know each other going back to the Tiger days when I met him initially. And then Andy and Curtis, and I don't want to forget anybody. It's just like you go on down the line. There's no ego. Everyone just kind of gets along. We get a kick out of what we do. Being on ESPN Plus, we get a lot of praise for not showing a lot of ads. We're on ESPN Plus. We could just kind of let it rip, man.
Right.
And we do. And we do that one thing that all golf, everyone in golf Twitter, all you guys want is every single shot. And so we do our level best to show as much as we can. And then I'm just, you know, we're on for a long time. I was giggling the other day thinking about, it was Friday at Southern Hills. And at some point, I forget who was, like, it's dark. There's like one guy left. And every swing, there were people's just guttural screams. And I said at some point, I don't know how many people are left at Southern Hills, but all of them are hammered. And it wasn't a funny line as much as it was just an honest line. And I thought, would I say that at Augusta National? I would not. But I feel like with the group that we're with and, you know, Seth Waugh and the whole group from the PGA and that I think they've embraced our passion for it and the fun that we have. It's a TV show, man, right? You're trying to make it fun, but it's not like we have some, you know, bullet points to make sure you do that. No, we just get along. Everyone knows the assignment and we're genuinely enjoying the company of people we're with.
And getting to work with Curtis. I mean, Curtis is the coolest guy in the room always. And I got the pleasure of getting to sit by him at Fox for a few years. I always knew which Irish pub he'd be at every night. You know, it'd be down the street. Yeah. It'd be kind of the dingiest Irish pub in the city. You know, you could always find him at the bar. He would always be eating some sort of a sandwich. And he would sit there and talk to you if you wanted to sit next to him. And I just feel like he does such a great job in and around calling golf. And again, he lends him his personality lends himself to what you do as well. I feel like the way he talks about the sport is as interesting as the way you kind of talk about it.
I love Curtis getting to know him in this way. Like I know the granddad. I know the fisherman. And I just love looking at him and just reminding him just how red-assed he'd get when he was out there and how he'd be, you know, the scariest wiry SOB you could ever hope to come across. And you know this because you've sat with him and you've seen it. He cares about wanting to be good at his job.
Absolutely.
And he's not just showing up a minute before the red light comes on. He's sincere about wanting to do well. And I'm, as the host, your job as a host is to put it on a tee so that Curtis can hit it the way he wants to hit it. And I just want to make sure that I give him the best chance to deliver the things because he's got a ton to share. You just want to make sure that, you know, because as I always prove, I talk too damn much as I'm doing it again here now. Just get out of the way. Like Curtis can tell you what it feels like to stand over that shot on 13. I just know it looks pretty, you know?
Going to look a little different this year. I'm very, very interested to get back there and see kind of what that tee shot looks like. It's been interesting to hear Scotty and Rory talk about the fact that it's basically just a straight driver now, as opposed to really having to kind of turn that ball over. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what 13 plays like after what we saw with 15 over the last year.
What do you think of that? Because I found it really interesting looking up the numbers last year, Shane, 13 and two played to the exact same stroke average. Now that's only 1 year. Eight was the easiest hole, not 13. Now I know that it plays shorter than they wish it would. And now it won't. And I think that, look, that left corner got some business through the years. Now it's going to get more, I think, because you get quick and you want that extra 10 yards. You try to step on it. And now all of a sudden, well, I mean, obviously for you as a lefty, it wouldn't be that. But you know what I'm talking about. But I do like the fact that forever the Jones quote, and it's been, you know, listed in every article about 13. The second shot was supposed to be what? A momentous decision. Well, if it's a pro choosing between 6 and 7, that ain't momentous.
No, you're not laying up. Yeah,
and
that's right.
yet, big numbers could still happen and did on 13, even at its shorter yardage. So look, that's as pretty a hole as there is in the world of golf. We know that, always has been. And now all of a sudden, look, you step on one, it's still a two shot hole. But if you just, if there's that hint of wind, if you kind of don't like your lie, now you really have some things to consider and chew on. And that is what the second nine, particularly come Saturday and Sunday, is what you want. You'd love to see somebody tie, just say, all right, F it. Give me what's the number I'm going to try to get there. All right, let's see it, man. Like, that's as good as it gets right there.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Curtis, I believe in 85, when he was as close as he could be to winning a Masters, I think he made six on 13 and 15 that final round, and I think he pulled head cover on both those second shots. I mean, as you said, you're not pulling a head cover when you're hitting 7-iron, or, you know, like what Bubba did in 14, where he hit it over the corner and had wedge in. I just love the fact that you're going to see people hitting driver off the tee on 13, even when you're one of the longest players in the world, like Rory McIlroy. And to your point, Scott, if you get a little cute with it and you go left, that's serious trouble. And that's when we're going to see sixes and sevens. And that will be the interesting part about this tee shot, is if you get cute and you go left, left brings in a number that the players don't want, and that could ruin your chances at a green jacket. And I think that's what Augusta was hoping to see.
Right. I think you should have to do something exceptional to make a three on that hole.
Agreed.
I think now that's probably going to be the case. I don't think you're not going to hit a decent but not great drive, hit a good second, obviously, and then maybe you know, roll in a bomb, or maybe you get one of those, you know, rolls off the swale and it gets down there close. You're not making three by accident there. It's going to require something great. It ought to. That's reasonable. And you won't have to do something horrible to bring seven into play. So just momentous decision, right? That's what it was meant to be. It feels like it probably will be again.
And what I've learned over the years of covering golf is, if the pros aren't big fans of it, it probably means it's going to be better TV. And so last year at 15, they're like, we don't like this change. It's like, well, that's because you can hit it in the water now. That's because you got to hit 3-wood into 15 to what can only be considered the smallest target on the planet.
Yeah. Look, Jack always said, like, he made a mental note of everybody that was bitching about stuff.
Yep, he's
like,
absolutely.
I'm not going to have to worry about them this week.
All right, I'll get you out on this, Scott. Outside of Tiger getting in contention on Sunday, if you could put a name in, let's say, the top three going into Sunday right now, who would that name be and why?
Homa.
I love that.
Homa. I just look, you were early on the obviously with the friendship and you and the no laying up guys. Like, I feel like you guys have, a lot of you all have helped us get to know Max before he's became this. He's a star.
Superstar.
Star. Look at the courses where that cat won, man. Big boy courses. Okay. Major championship courses. He's top 10 in the world. And I don't want to get off on it, you know, whatever. It's not sappy, but he's a dad. And you know this. I found out late in life, you know, the lens of the world's different as a papa. Context, perspective, all that stuff. It's a real thing. It's a different thing. If Max played well and had a chance, I feel like that's the last hurdle. He's won at Riv. He's won at Quail Hollow. He's won a pot full of tournaments in a short window. He's top 10. He's a superstar. But winning a major as a superstar, that's the last thing to check off your list where you're just like, all right, I'm a made guy. And we all are fond of Max because of who he is. He's honest, he's funny, he's self-deprecating, and he's also a badass player. So I'd pencil Max up there, and I wouldn't be at all shocked if that's where he is.
I think the coolest part about getting to follow Max from regular PGA Tour player to, your point, Scott, superstar, is the parts of his game that I think didn't play at Augusta, especially early in his time at the Masters. He wasn't an excellent chipper of the golf ball. He struggled at times on the greens. To make those weapons, you know how much work has to go in to turn that into a benefit to your golf game?
It's like Giannis. Like, you'd still rather let Giannis shoot from three.
Right.
Because the minute he takes one dribble, he's going to dunk. But now if you leave him open from there, he can hurt you from there. And now Max putting the golf ball, is he the best putter in the world? I don't think he's the best, but he's a guy that when he stands over it, I don't think there's 20 guys better in the world rolling the ball than him. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, when he won, I was covering the Fortinet, and when he chipped in and won, and then the whole Willett thing happened. His caddy Joe, who's one of the great guys in the world as well, told me after they were on the putting green, and they said they'd done some research with his coach the week before, and his coach told him, Max, you're statistically the best chipper in the world off fairway grass. In the world. On the PGA Tour and otherwise, you're the best chipper in the world off grass. And he chunked that bunker shot. He was trying to hole it, and he's in the fairway just short of the green. And Joe said, hey, remember, you're the best in the world at this. Chip it in. And he chips it in. You know, I mean, to your point,
right,
you're answering the calls. People ask Giannis, oh, man, you're just a long guy that stretches over people and dunks. And he goes, okay, I'll make this other stuff as good as other people do. And now I can shoot, right, and I can pull up, and I can scare you from this distance as well. And now you got to respect that. And there are parts of Max's game that get the respect it deserves now from his peers. And I think the confidence is only growing. And I can guarantee he is fired up to get there, especially with the way he played at the match play. I'm with you. Homa on the leaderboard would be great. Hey, Scott, one request. You got to change your Twitter profile every Masters week to the Scott Van Pelt. I just think for the week, and then you can change it back. But I miss when you don't have that as your avatar.
For folks that don't know what happened, it was years ago. Adam Scott and Bo Van Pelt played together, and that made the pairings on the famous Masters pairings board, Scott Van Pelt. So I've got that. You won't be surprised that that's in the phone here somewhere.
Okay.
We'll sort that out. We got a little bit of time to get that done. We'll do that.
Awesome. Well, enjoy the rest of your break. Excited for Masters Week. Excited to listen to the coverage. Excited to see you out there. Thanks as always, Scott.
Shane, it's a great pleasure, man. I look forward to saying hello in person, and we'll do it again next spring.
Next year. Thanks. That's Scott Van Pelt. Appreciate the time. Okay, big shout out to SVP for his time. He's the best, and just always pumped to hear him on the call when golf comes around. Obviously, we get him at the Masters, and we get him at the PGA Championship, but those are always a pleasure, and those are always some of my favorite podcasts we do each and every year. A reminder that I have a coffee that I collabed with Good Walk Coffee Company on. It's called the Bacon Breakfast Blend. It's awesome. You can make it cold brew. You can get it whole bean. You can get it ground and all that, and I think it's a good punch to your morning regiment. And if you want to order that, it's goodwalkcoffee.com/bacon. And before we go, you know, everybody always talks about the Masters app. And I saw Chad Mumm, who is the executive producer of Full Swing, who we've had on this podcast before, mentioned last week that the Masters app is considered by industry standard the best app in the world. Now, think about Netflix and think about HBO and you think about Facebook, Meta, whatever you want to call it, all these companies that are literally tech companies that are getting passed by a golf tournament in Georgia. And it's true. When you get to experience the Masters app during 1 week out of the year, it is the best experience. And the people behind IBM are a big reason that it's so good. So I reached out to IBM and just asked if there was somebody there that could just talk about the app and the experience and how it's improved, because I'm interested in that, and I figured you might be interested as well. So Noah Sykin, who's the Vice President of Sports and Entertainment Partnerships at IBM, jumped on the podcast just for a few questions. And if something you're interested in, I think you're going to like it. So let's get to that quick conversation with Noah. Well, I'm excited about this. Noah Sykin, the Vice President of Sports and Entertainment Partnerships at IBM, joins us. And Noah, there are things we get excited about in our lives. I would say number one, first and foremost, is the Masters app and the experience that we get each and every year when Augusta National rolls around on the calendar. I was reading around online, and Chad Mumm, who I know you know, producer Full Swing, said he had people at Netflix call it the best app in the world. And I think that is fair to say. What's it like being behind something that is, I'd say, universally loved in a time where nothing's universally loved?
Yes, Shane, thanks for having me. And, you know, we're certainly proud of the app. I spend 51 weeks a year wondering when I'm going to get my Masters app experience back. But we really do think about how do we make it the most compelling experience in sports. And it's, you know, it's 7 days or it's 4 days, depending on how you want to count. But we want to bring the amazingness that is Augusta to life for people. You know, you've been there and there's really nothing like being there, but we think the Masters app is pretty darn close.
So I know you work with some other entities. I know you work with like the US Open and some fantasy sports and things like that. How different is your experience with Augusta National and the Masters versus maybe some of the other properties or other companies that you work alongside?
Yeah, look, we have great partners, across the portfolio, but the Masters, you know, it's always just a little bit different. First of all, we have a long-term relationship. We can plan 3-5 years out. And that's what the Masters really asks us to do. What's coming down the pike? How do we get out in front of the next innovation? We rolled out, the round in 3 minutes a couple of years ago, then the personalized My Group experience. And so we really try to get on the edge of it. And we have the partners at the Masters that are able to do that and give us the latitude to do that and are great, you know, great visionaries in and of them by themselves.
So who comes to whom with ideas? Is it you guys going to Augusta? Is it Augusta coming to y'all? Because I think back even in my early years of watching, you know, the Masters coverage online, and you had Eamon Corner, and then you started to get into the featured groups. And then now, I mean, extra holes are added. I know you guys have some new endeavors this year that you're excited to talk about, but how do those conversations go?
Yeah, well, I think we think about strategy first. You know, I don't think at Augusta National there's necessarily any AI experts, any data scientists who are writing the code, but they have a great vision for how they want the event to be presented. Years ago at the launch of Masters.com, you know, we had to share the fact that, you know, you can make your scores available online, right? And that was mind-blowing, but they knew they wanted to be out in front. And the same thing's true today. We talk about, how do we create a personalized experience? The Masters set, or the Augusta National folks, set the goal for the most personalized experience in all of golf and all of sport. And then we work together to think about, well, what does that mean? And then most importantly, how do you create that? And I think we work together on the strategy, but the how is where really IBM comes in.
Okay, Noah, you said AI. And I know that's hot these days, everybody talking about it. I mean, ChatGPT is something I feel like floats around on Twitter and social a lot. How is AI going to be involved in the 2023 Masters?
Yeah, thanks. So we've been focused on AI for many, many years. But to your point, we have a new feature capability coming out this year. We call it AI commentary. You know, if you watch the My Group experience or you look at any of the individual shots on the scorecards on masters.com, we've captured every single shot on every single hole with broadcast partners, but there's a lot of quiet golf. And so what we thought about was, well, how do we overlay commentary on that? So you have what people come to expect, which is the richness of a broadcast experience with commentary. And so that's one of the things that people can expect when you're looking at your My Group. You can turn sound on, you can turn sound off, but we've used the data coming from the course as an input to create that natural language commentary.
Is it going to sound like anyone? I mean, is this going to be Jim Nance AI? Like, what does that experience sound like for people? Because I think, you know, still in 2023, we think about AI, and I think my brain typically goes robotic. What is it going to sound like?
Yeah, well, it's going to sound like probably not like an overly human voice, but we call the voice Henry.
My son, he'll be excited.
But it's, you know, it's not Jim Nance. It's its own unique voice. And it's, okay, you know, it's created for this particular use case.
Anything else new for 2023 outside of what you just talked about?
Yeah, predictions. So last year we rolled out round end predictions. So you're going to score 72, right? This year we have hole by hole. Every single hole we have a prediction. We looked at 6 years worth of data. We're going to be updating over 250,000 predictions after every hole for every player. So day by day, you can see who's going to finish, who we're going to predict is going to finish high and low today. But on the, you know, Amen Corner, pick your favorite hole, we're going to be able to predict who's going to be making birdie, who's going to make that hole in one, who knows. But those hole by hole predictions is something people should look for on masters.com.
All right. So Noah, I'm watching, let's go Max Homa. He's on 12. Is it player? It's the history of the event. It's the way the whole location is that day. Is weather conditions factor in? I mean, how much data is thrown into these predictions hole by hole?
Yeah. So we have, again, 6 years worth of data, and it's all, you know, all, everything that's happened in those 6 years is brewed in, right? We had the fall Masters in 2020. That's in the data. It was a little bit unique that year, that's for sure. but we had really cold weather last year. So the weather is factored in because it's based in the model, and we've seen that weather over the course of time. So it's player history, it's hole history, it's weather history, it's all the things that went into creating those thousands, hundreds of thousands of points of data over the past 6 years.
All right, Noah, I want to ask about your personal Masters experience. Okay, so I'm assuming you probably go on certain days, if not all the days, but let's say you're at home on Saturday or Sunday. How does a man that eats and breathes this 52 weeks out of the year, how do you consume it? Are you laptop, iPad, TVs going? I mean, how many screens are you rocking and rolling as you're consuming the Masters?
Shane, this is a softball, I think. Well, I'm always going to watch on Masters.com.
There you go. I love that.
But, you know, check out the video experiences on Masters.com. You can get those feature groups, the Amen Corner. You can pick your shot. You can go to the range and see how people are practicing. And for the really tuned in folks, start on Wednesday, the par three. If you're on site or even watching on ESPN, par three is, you know, one of the most amazing couple of hours in golf. So I always tune people into that.
Noah, what do people say to you when you tell them what you do and who you're involved in? Because again, we live in a time where nobody agrees on anything. I mean, you can't say sandwiches are good without getting yelled at. You can't say a smoothie tastes good. I mean, everybody's going to have a point to kind of come back at you with. This feels like one of those things that everybody loves. What is it like when you get to chat with people about Masters.com and your involvement with it?
Well, I'll tell you, just in terms of the Masters itself, the Masters is the one thing in the world that people are never disappointed by visiting in person. You always have this expectation, and everybody to a person says, it was better than I could have imagined. And that's our aspiration for the website and the mobile applications as well. It's better than I imagined, and it's better than, you know, anything else in golf. So, you know, if that's the reaction that we get on site with people we visit with, and off site people who visit the digital platforms, that's the kind of result I have. And I can't complain about my job, that's for sure.
Listen, nobody can see you here. You're wearing a Miami half zip. We're recording this before the weekend. I'm rooting on the Hurricanes. We were talking before we got going. I love the coach and I love the story. And this has been a wacky, crazy March Madness. But I hope by the time people are listening to this, you're the happiest person in the room.
Oh, Shane, from your lips to everybody's ears, it's an amazing weekend. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, sports, sports, sports. Well, we can't wait for, of course, the Masters at Masters.com. Noah, really appreciate the time.
Thanks, Shane.
All righty. That'll do it for this week's Get a Grip. I'll be back Sunday night. I am sharing a house for the second year in a row with a man that I am a big fan of. His name is Scott Verplank. You may have heard the name. All-time flusher, by the way. Should have given him a little bit more of a shout-out on the Flushers episode with Andy Johnson. But I have talked Scott into doing a Masters recap pod on Sunday night. So after the tournament wraps and after we do Twitter Spaces, I'll go back to the rental house, and I'm going to make Verplank get on the mic. So you will have a Sunday night Masters recap episode that you can listen to either Sunday night or Monday morning. So keep an eye out for that. Everybody, have a great week. Have a safe week. Enjoy the golf tournament. Enjoy all that comes with the 1 week out of the year that we get this. And you know what happens come Sunday night? We are all a bit sad knowing that it'll be another year until we get this again. So every day, embrace it. Bring the iPad to work. Have it on your iPhone. Download the app. And again, 4 days of this, and it only comes once a year. So when we get it, we have to embrace it. And I'm super excited about it. And we will chat back with you guys on Sunday.